And now the pressure's going to build for the second run. Oh, dear. Hello, and welcome to episode 41 of Great Things with Great Tech, the podcast highlighting companies doing great things with great technology. My name's Anthony Spiteri, and in this episode, we're talking to a company that uses file and object storage, specializing in S3 object storage around the data center and hybrid cloud, a company that turns information into insights with an infinitely scalable platform that consolidates, manages, and protects enterprise data, a company that uses enterprise object storage to bring cloud technology and economics to the data center in an uncompromising and durable way, using the industry's most compatible S3 API. The company is Cloudian. I'm talking with Gary Ogasawa, the CTO of Cloudian. Welcome to the show, Gary.
Great. Nice to talk to you, Anthony.
Yeah, mate. And again, Yeah, exactly. Like we talked about, I probably did butcher your name again. So just put it out there again, just so that the people know how to pronounce your second name properly.
And we can use it to Gary Ogasawara.
Ogasawara. So I said it right then. I got it right that second time.
Yeah, it's good enough.
There you go. So welcome to the show, Gary. But before we get into Cloudian, before we talk about all things S3, this is the first episode of 2022, so I've got to give a shout out to the show. And if you love great things with great tech and would like to feature in future episodes, you can click on the link in the show notes or go to the brand new website at www.gtwgt.com and register your interest. And this episode's special, Gary, because this is the first episode where we're going to try a new initiative from Anchor, which is where the podcast gets hosted and distributed from. Anchor now part of Spotify. Spotify brought out video podcasting. So they're trying to, I think, kill a bit of YouTube there, right? And stop people from doing podcasts on YouTube. But this is going to be the first time that we're going to leverage this technology. So looking forward to that. But again, subscribe if you haven't subscribed, and please check out all the past episodes on the website. So with that, Gary, let's get into Cloudian. It's a company that I've wanted to have on the show since I started the show, a great partner of the company that I work for, Veeam. But let's talk about the founding, which started in 2011, I believe, and you were there. So chat a little bit about the founding and the founders.
Yeah, it's a good story, actually. So actually, the CEO of Cloudian, Mike So, he's been my boss for over 20 years.
Okay.
So prior to Cloudian, he was CEO of a different company called Gemini Mobile, and I led the technical team there. And actually, the genesis of Cloudian and the core technical team of Cloudian came from that same technical team there. And it's an interesting story. That company, Gemini Mobile, was fairly successful. What we were doing there is we were building server software for wireless carriers. And what it would do would be multimedia messaging. So if you think back, 10, 15 years ago, multimedia messaging was sort of just starting up right there, right? So when people would send messages, they would just be text, but now you would be able to include photos and videos inside those messages. And so we built the software that powered that.
It
would have to,
like, all of it have to, like the industry, like, whoa.
Right. So a key part of that is you have to store all this, and you have to store all this under high transaction load, right? So that technology that we developed there, what we wanted to do. So one of the problems with that industry is there's probably 200 potential buyers or 200 potential customers. So these monolith wireless carriers, right?
Yeah.
So it's a very spiky revenue stream. You would get, huge deal, and then crickets, huge deal. So with Cloudian, the idea was that we democratize this and make this software and this object storage software available to all organizations and enterprises of all different sizes.
Awesome. So Cloudian was born from the need to add multimedia messages to text messages for carriers. And basically because you had to store it somewhere, and you guys needed an efficient way to store those multimedia messages.
Yeah, you had to be clever of how you store it and how, you know, it's a standard distributed systems problem. You know, you have to be able to scale out and you have to be able to tolerate a lot of faults, and all under super high load.
So how did you start? So you guys built something out of software to start with, or on a piece of hardware? Yeah. So how did that kind of come about, that the genesis of what was the Cloudian object storage became Cloudian?
Yeah. So there's often a lot of confusion about from new people who come and hear about Cloudian. So we built software. So that's as opposed to someone like AWS S3 that hosts a service, right? So, yeah. So we're not hosting any service. What we do is we build software and provide that software to enterprises and companies that deploy that software in their data center, on the edge, or in their private clouds. And that then provides the storage capability. So, so one of the keys to that is that because of when Cloudian was born, you know, we sort of saw what the legacy players were doing, yeah. and then what was sort of how we could improve on that and provide much more. And one of those important aspects is that we knew we wanted to be software, and we knew we wanted to be, you know, in the user space, right? We didn't want to be inside the kernel or tied to any particular hardware. Yeah. So
agnostic. So, yeah. Agnosticity.
Yeah. And that, you know, that has all the advantages, right? You could then deploy your software on multiple platforms as the hardware gets better, your performance gets better, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah. And that's a key today. Like you see a lot of obviously software people, well, companies want to see themselves as being a software company primarily, because I think there's a bit of a stigma attached to being hardware plus software, or even, you know, something that's an appliance based model. So, you know, that's all tied together. So you can't decouple the both. Right. So you're a lot more flexible as a company if you can be software, because like you said, underlying hardware will get better because that's just the nature of it. And the software will continue to work independently of that and take advantage of the modern hardware as it goes along. So how did you start out in terms of like when you were shipping your first Cloudian boxes, or when you're talking to your customers in the early days, what did it look like in terms of a Cloudian box or a solution?
Yeah. So, does your audience listeners know what object storage is? Or
yeah, maybe. I hope they should today. Like, you know, but it's a good level set, right? Because, you know, I think we'll talk about object storage in a more grand industry sense a bit later on, and where it sits and where it's come from. But obviously, people know S3. People know that there's now, you know, especially technical decision makers, IT operators, platform guys, they know that object storage is an option on premises as well in a hybrid sense. So maybe it's more about talking about object storage from a 30,000 foot view to level set, and then bringing it into the conversation that we'll have a little bit later around where it is in the industry.
Yeah, sure. So one way I like to explain this is that there's been an evolution in storage. So how do people store data? So if you look at the very lowest level, start with block storage. So that's, you know, iSCSI and those types of protocols. And then as you move up the application hierarchy to above block, then you get to file storage, right? And that's, you know, what you would traditionally see in a command line, say Linux, where you have a file that has a specific name, it's stored in a certain directory. So that was sort of where, well, of course, there's a lot of data still stored in file, but then above that layer, as we go up this abstraction hierarchy, then that's object, right? So object, we don't really care about, you know, I have an object that's an image like cat3.jpg. I don't really care from the application perspective that it's stored in. It might be stored in six different files, and it might be stored on three different machines. But from my perspective as an application developer, I'm just concerned about the object itself, the cat3.jpg, right? So that's a higher level. So that's really where this really started, you know, this flywheel of, now that application developers can start thinking at this higher abstraction level, then it's much easier. and they could operate on objects rather than thinking about low-level files, or even worse, thinking about blocks, storage, and moving across that protocol. So, you know, to your question about, you know, how Cloudion got started, we really started to look at these early adopters of, you know, I'm starting to see the need of having large capacity storage that's much more scalable and fault tolerant than what my current filers are doing.
Yeah, so you hit some key points there: scalability, reliability, and now more than ever, also, you know, the notion of object lock and protection on the file system as well, which I think we'll get to a little bit later in terms of how that fits into obviously ransomware and whatnot. But yeah, I mean, I know that in my early days of storage, when we were working on monoliths, working for service provider like I did, we would obviously buy the VNXs of the world. Pretty simple, big machines, ugly, you know, went down. When they went down hard. You know, if the right cache went, performance went, and you lost data. And, you know, I know that even back then in the 2010, 2011, 2012 period, we were looking at this, you know, Ceph as an example was just sort of coming out of its infancy. So we knew about object storage, but we also knew that Amazon had S3, and they were pumping that. Right. And that was the de facto standard. So for the longest time, and I think we're jumping ahead, but I might as well talk about it now. For the longest time, object storage was seen as something that the public clouds did. Azure with their Blob, AWS S3 and what they did, and extending to Glacier for archival. So at what point did you guys see the need to be able to start to go to enterprises or small, medium businesses or service providers, as you guys do as well, and say, hey, don't think about object storage or S3 as just AWS. Think about us. How did that happen?
I mean, this is a real interesting story. I mean, it's a very interesting and important time. So yeah, if you look back at 2011, 2012 time period, it was not clear at all that S3 would dominate like it is today. I mean, now, you know, everyone does S3. It is the de facto standard for object. But if you think back to 2012, that wasn't clear at all. So first, you know, like the problems you outlined, first, it's not an open, you know, it's not community owned, it's owned by one company, Amazon, right? So that in itself is a problem. So there were open source object storage standards, different vendors would start building their own APIs for object, et cetera. So for us, one of the important decisions and what led to a lot of our growth in the start was we placed all our bets on S3. So one of the key first principles of our company is that, you know, we want to be the best, highest fidelity S3 API that you could find.
Okay.
And we would never want to lose any sort of competition where they're comparing S3 API fidelity. So we poured in a lot of, developer and QA and effort into building that up.
Just quickly, when you say fidelity, what do you mean by that?
So one of the keys is a sort of a sidetrack, but if you remember like Steve Ballmer, developers. So they were the importance. So we took that to heart as well, and we believe it. So the key is, how do you build software, or, you know, when we're talking about storage, we're talking about infrastructure that other application developers can then use and consume. So
I get it.
You want to make it as easy as possible for those developers to say, you know, write an API, write their code, and have them be secure that they won't have to rewrite it if the API changes and so on. So when we talk about the fidelity or the high fidelity of our S3 implementation, it's to the level of, we want every single error message that comes back in HTTP response to be exactly the same, you know, character by character to AWS. Then if the developer is doing things like parsing an error string, and it works on AWS, then it'll work seamlessly on ours. We want every single response that gets sent to have the same behavior and feel as it does with AWS. So really, you know, our mantra in that days was S3 in a box. So of course the developer you could use and point to AWS, but then just change your configuration, repoint your endpoint to Cloudiant and it'll work. And that was our value prop.
Yeah, which is great because ultimately now 10 years later, you think about, you know, within a hybrid world, which is the world we're in now, people have understood that cloud isn't just the public cloud, isn't just the cloud that you see with AWS, whatever. It's more about how a consumption method, how you consume it, how applications, developers develop applications against it, and or how do you get efficiencies out of a cloud type model. So it doesn't just matter. It doesn't have to be AWS or a public cloud. More and more with the hybrid cloud, a lot of vendors, like you said, are trying to get cloud-like experiences even on premises. So what you're explaining is effectively ahead of the game. If it, you know, back in 2012, thinking about this consumption model, right?
Right. And you know, if you think about that idea, it's really has a name or has been given a name. It's called API first. The idea that companies can build around an API, that has been very important for, you know, if you look at companies like Twilio or other companies that, you know, Snowflake is really good at providing different APIs to access. So it's really has been important in the development of the software, space. I think in the past 10 years.
And you know what as well, people probably don't equate storage companies with that. I mean, you know, you think of like a modern company, like a Snowflake or whatever it is. Yes, you do. But a storage company, you kind of go, well, how am I going to consume and operate storage through an API? Like, it seems like it's a stagnant sort of operation that I'm doing as a storage guy, right? But the ultimate reality is the storage guys aren't the consumers anymore. Storage guys look after that platform potentially. If you sell a Cloudian, unit to a company, you've got people that operate the box, the unit, and maybe, you know, interact with you guys. But the consumer of that storage is now not the VM that it sits on, but it's an application developer who's developing with it, because storage has moved up the stack. I've had this said in a couple of episodes. If you were to ask a developer, you know, what their idea of a storage system is, a developer will go, Cassandra, or they'll say Hadoop, or they'll say MySQL. You know what I mean? It's a lot different to what platform guys like me thought about as storage in the past. So yeah, it hits all of those sort of mantras, doesn't it?
Yeah, that's really well said. And I think, that's an important change that has occurred very recently.
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit more about the company. This point, Cloudiant has raised almost $200 million from what I've seen in funding, over six rounds. So Crunchbase is my friend. Your latest funding was a couple of years ago now, Series E. So that's great. You've kind of been on your own, you know, for a while now, which is awesome to see. You've obviously built up, you've got lots of, you know, worldwide success. You've got employees in almost every region now. Just maybe talk about your products as well, because you got HyperStore, it's your flagship product. There was an acquisition that you guys did was it Infinity Storage in 2018, which got you Hyperfile. So I think that's where that came from anyway. So maybe just talk about, you know, the actual storage solutions at a very high level and what you guys are offering to your customers. And then just as another note, you know, where are you seeing success today? I know you guys have been doing a lot in service provider land, but, you know, what other areas, what other demographics are you getting your success with the software?
Sure. First of all, very well researched on the company, but as you said, HyperStore is our flagship, and that's our S3 software, storage software, right? That responds to the S3 API, and then how you can view it is, if that's at the center of the universe, then we have different products around that and different ways to deploy HyperStore as well. So Hyperfile, as you mentioned, is our file gateway or our file API into S3 storage. So there's still a lot of products that speak file, and they want as well to be able to have the ability to also use object storage and file and maintain all that at once. So,
okay, yeah.
So as we looked at technologies to products to do that, because customers demanded that, right? They say, you know, sure, we want object for our new use cases, but we also want to put some of our file use cases onto object. So how can you do that? And this Hyperfile provides that type of capability that's very crucial and continues to be a very popular part. And then as the product got better and better and the types of users changed from, you know, your deep hacker storage architect manager to different types of people broadening out the market, then we realized we needed a much better observability type solution. And okay. That's what we call our HyperIQ product. So okay. that is a modern application that takes metrics from all the running pieces of software that we have, HyperStore and Hyperfile, and displays it in a way for users to understand what's going on in their systems and dive to different levels of abstraction via that GUI. So those are our prime functional products. And then as well, we've started to see, as we mentioned at the top, we've been based on software. Yeah. So what we've been seeing is that different customers and different users want different ways to consume that software. So our first product was just on bare metal, right? So you would have a server, you would install CentOS Linux or Red Hat Linux,
okay,
and then
okay.
install our software on top of it.
Right.
But
okay.
Then, but then so many customers, as you know, have like a pure VM environment, right? So they might be all VMware. So can Cloudian software run on VMs? And the answer is yes, right? So we have a set of products for that. And then after that, then there's of course Kubernetes. So now companies are demanding, and some companies are saying all new applications and services should run in my Kubernetes environment. So we've built products and or taken our HyperStore product and provided a Kubernetes deployment for that as well.
Yeah,
and
it must be said, it took 22 minutes to say get Kubernetes into the conversation for the first time this year. So that's pretty good. I'll take that. It's not bad. Now, obviously, you know, it's good because, you know, I think, you know, what you've explained there is an evolution uh-huh. of where you know, people and how they want to consume based on where the applications are. And there's no doubt that Kubernetes right. is part of that process. So to hear that you guys are expanding right. and have expanded into that is good. You made a really good point about, you know, the start where you'd install Cloudian on, and I think from my research and tinkering with it, because I've tinkered with it as well, given, you know, where I work and whatnot, you can still kind of install it on a bare metal, on an OS, right? There's still a binary that you
That's
can install.
Right.
Yeah, so you can still do
Definitely.
That today. So, and I guess that gives you guys flexibility as well, but how do you, I want to talk about scalability and reliability, because that's huge sure. in this industry, right? Scalability, reliability, and then performance. Now, typically, you mm-hmm. know that the 2 out of 3 rule, right? Like you mm-hmm. can have 2 out of 3, but you can't have 3 out of 3. How do you guys right. marry all those challenges to remain scalable, reliable, with people's varying hardware out there that people could put your software on? I mean, do you guys have a sense of ready nodes or some sort of validated nodes? How does that work for you guys?
Right. So this also ties into the timeline of Cloudian's history, and especially when Cloudian's technology was being developed in the 2010, 2010 to 2012, you know, that was really what we saw is the blooming age, the high point of distributed systems. So that's where we saw, you know, HBase, Hadoop, Cassandra, Mongo. Yeah. This type of distributed systems research finally came into software, where now we were able to build software that is able to build in this idea that things are going to fail, nodes are going to fail, networks are going to fail all the time. And we want to be able to distribute our system to take into account and be able to handle all these faults. And then the second part, be able to scale out and be able to add capacity by adding hardware to a running system. Yeah. And be able to add capacity. So those two concepts, I think, were very new at that time, and because of when Cloudian was developed and built, it allowed us to take the best of that technology and yeah. build it upon that. So to your point about heterogeneous hardware, so that is a very important point for Cloudian's design. So one of the things is, as a small software startup, to break into the market, you know, customers were unwilling to, say, devote, you know, racks and racks of yeah. hardware to us. They said, you know, so we had this concept called start small, right? So you would start with a very small cluster that might, our minimum was three nodes, but, you know, you could be clever about how you configure that.
Yeah.
And then you keep adding more and more hardware over time to add on to that system. And that was quite a new model, right? Rather than this idea of you buy a fixed amount of capacity and a fixed amount of hardware, and then that's it, all you have.
Yeah, but which is one of the biggest problems of storage, right? Like you buy initial and then you have to buy the next part, but the next part costs you three or four times more under maintenance than what the initial part did. And then there's space issues and all that kind of stuff. So yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, so that's the concept of elasticity, we call it. So we want to be able to add capacity to a running system and have it, you know, sort of, your performance might take a temporary dip as you ingest that new configuration, but then you want to achieve this near linear improvement in capacity as you add resources.
Yeah. So linear scalability, linear performance, it's what, you know, right. To be fair, it's talked about by a lot of players today. So I think that the mm-hmm. question, like, what makes you guys different? Like why Cloudian, you know, over someone else from that point of view?
Well, one of the things is you have very fine grained control over what we call storage policy. So that's how you store a data. So in Cloudian system, you could define different policies. So probably over half of our installations are already multiple data centers. So a very common configuration is you might want to have some of the data for a particular object on one data center. And then you have another data center that also is either a mirror or it's a backup copy. So that distinction of how you set it up defines the consistency policy of how you would do that, right? So whether it's strongly consistent or whether it's eventually consistent. So that type of policy and configuration with the Cloudian system can be applied at the bucket level. So a bucket is the container of, or, you know, a grouping of objects. So that is very unique in object storage, and it gives the customers a lot of flexibility, because a lot of times the customer might buy object storage for one particular use case.
Yeah.
But then as they see it's running smoothly and they're getting a lot of cost effectiveness from it, then they want to expand it to other use cases. And for those new use cases, they might have different characteristics that you want. Like you talked before about the high performance use cases, right? So for a high performance use case, you might want to configure how those buckets are stored in a different storage policy. So that's a classic example.
So that's a good segue to the Cloudian use cases, which is on the notes, right? So obviously, I think if people were to ask about Cloudian today, and people, if you go to someone and say, hey, what do you think, what's Cloudian? They would say, okay, S3, object storage, backup archive, long-term storage, that's kind of what it is, right? So, which, so, you know, backup archive, I know traditionally, you know, media, you know, like big data, engineering, you know, but you guys are also looking at, you know, hybrid cloud, Internet of Things, AL, ML sort of scenarios. And the question that I want to ask will lead into more, the more use cases, but I think we've talked a lot about the evolution of S3 from AWS to on-prem to cloud to now this hybrid cloud model. We've talked about the consumption, you know, what it is to actually install it, the differences between, you know, what Amazon has versus what you do on-premises. At this point in time, I feel, and a bit of the industry, some certain subset of it feels that we're hitting an inflection point in terms of S3 object storage in itself becoming more of a primary storage target because we'd be able to get more performance, more reliability. So what's your thoughts there on the current state of that versus the future of S3 as a primary storage target?
Yeah, we see the same thing. Traditionally, as you've mentioned, object storage has been viewed as not the hot tier, right? Not the tier of data that's frequently accessed and that has low latency, but the cheap and deep tier underneath that, behind that. But as technology has improved and as the technology has allowed the speed of object storage to get much better. So just by its nature, just replacing spinning drives with all flash drives, your performance increases automatically without you doing anything or rewriting one piece of code. And then the other part is on the, so that's sort of, I look at it as a demand, supply demand problem, right? So that's on the supply side, right? So object storage has gotten much better at higher performance and being able to take up much more of this high performance workloads. And then on the demand side, it's really taken off, right? That need to do much more high performance compute, right? So by high performance, it's really two aspects when we talk about object storage. It's one is the bandwidth, how much, you know, how wide is that pipe? And then probably more important than that is the latency, right? So what's the maximum, you know, round trip response time that I'll get back from my request? So the use cases that you mentioned, you know, traditionally there would be, if you look at a big data workload, there would be split into two, right? You would have this batch workflow where you collect a lot of, say, transaction data. You run your Hadoop jobs overnight, and then next morning you'd have a report saying, you know, this is all that happened in that day. And then you would have, you know, analysts doing this data warehouse operation against that batch data. So that's the traditional ETL batch workflow. But then below that, then now we're getting this real-time workflow where, you know, we say all data is streaming data, right? So all data has a timestamp associated to it. The most obvious one is applications just generating log files that have timestamps on them. So you're getting this continuous flow of data, and you don't want to wait 1 hour or 6 hours for a batch job to run to analyze that, right? You want to know immediately what's happening, like who's accessing this piece of data, or who's viewing this content, or who's buying this product and where, and you want to know that in real time. So you could take action to that, right? So you could do fraud detection, you could do advertising, you could do promotions, et cetera. So that need to do that sort of analysis, AI, ML, as quickly as possible is really driving that demand side on the object storage high performance workloads.
Yeah. And then it becomes like a physics issue, right? You know, like you said, like, and right. we talked about this earlier, is it speed of light sort of problem, like latency, right. And it all comes down to the physics of, you know, what you're backing to, you know, the software. We talked about it, actually, didn't we? Software will do what it does, and then the software will catch up with the hardware will go ahead, and then the software will catch up with the hardware eventually. And this is the sort of we talked about a flywheel, but this is like the spinning, you know, future of this, because eventually the software will be as good, and then the hardware will be very good. So you'd be able to use it for a primary use case because you won't know the difference. And then the economies of what object storage offers over traditional block storage will win almost every day, because we know, like, people that have worked with both systems understand the great benefits and efficiencies of object storage. At this point in time, it's just been speed, scalability, and performance issues that have kind of made people be a little bit wary about it. But I've certainly seen that change, and you explained it beautifully. I wanted to go ahead. I don't know if you wanted to comment on that, but I wanted to ask you about data gravity as well.
Yeah, just one final point on that is that it's being validated by what we see in the products available. So these companies like Pure Storage that traditionally had offered very high performance, they're starting to, you know, want to take over these object workloads. So they're building more and more object type functionality into their systems. And then, of course, you know, the object storage vendors are moving more and more, you know, in the other direction. They're sort of converging and taking over more of this. So it's very, very interesting time.
And the guys that get kind of squeezed out from that convergence potentially are the more traditional storage players. unless they do something, unless they do something, you know. So that's awesome. Talk a bit about data gravity, because it's a great term. I've used it before on this, but yeah, what's your take on the term data gravity?
Right. So it's if we take the two parts, data and compute, and separate them, right? So if you look in the past, really, the compute, if we think about the program or the code, that and then the execution of that has sort of been the center of computer science, or even, you know, software itself, right? So let's build the mainframe. We'll build this really high performance hardware that can execute my code. And then, you know, we'll just feed it some punch cards or feed it some data every so often and run it. So that's a compute centric model. But really, as we've evolved, what's happened is that compute and even the algorithm. So if we look at machine learning algorithms, they've largely been commoditized. I mean, we've sort of solved the machine learning problem. We know what algorithms we want to apply. We just need the right data to apply it to. So data becomes primary, and the key is the data is where the value is, not the compute side or not even the programs themselves. The value lies in the data itself. And the second half of that is that, where is that data coming from? It's not being generated in the cloud, right? The cloud is off here waiting for data to be pushed into it. The data is being generated at the edge, right? Yep. It's these IoT sensors out there. It's your all these pieces of the software that's out there that's generating log files. That's where all this data is coming. So the concept of data gravity is the data is pulling everything to it. And what we need to do is to build platforms that support this type of model, where we can move compute to where the data is, execute it on that data, and then be done with it and stop, you know, moving these large pieces of data all around our network.
I get you. Yeah. Makes sense.
So that's the concept, right? So, and autonomous vehicles is another good example of that, right? Yep. So you don't want your data, the data is being generated at the car and its sensors, not elsewhere. And you want, the ideal situation is that you're able to use that data in the car as it's being generated to make decisions, not having to make a round trip, pushing my data up to the cloud, and then having it come back saying, you know, turn left.
Yeah. So are you saying that you guys are going to be putting Cloudian software into Teslas?
Well, maybe not Teslas.
That would be a bombshell.
But autonomous vehicles definitely are a prime candidate for object storage and compute.
Well, isn't that funny? It's like that's a complete joke, but the reality is actually that it probably is going to happen.
Yeah, think about actually we know this. There's LiDAR rigs on autonomous vehicles. They're generating 10 terabytes of data per day.
Yeah, it's mental. Yeah, it's so much telemetric data. Yeah. All right, let's round up. Again, like I told you at the start, we could talk for hours. And again, I say that on every episode I started. It took like about 40 minutes to get into it in 2022. But I want to talk about Cloudian's partnerships, because obviously it's very important for you guys, the way you've gone out and partners with tech vendors. The names, obviously Veeam, VMware, Lenovo, a number of these vendors that you've partnered with, Commvault, and also interestingly, more recently, Weka, who I had on the show last year. So you've made it your purpose to go out and partner. So to that end, you know, what's the concept of those partnerships? How does that help Cloudian? And what makes a good technology partner for you?
Right. So it's really about this message that data by itself is not valuable, right? Just storing data by itself is not valuable. We want to be able to use that data to make decisions or do analysis, run my machine learning and analysis and do work on it. So in order to do that, then Cloudian, it's useless sitting in isolation by itself, right? We need and want partners to be surrounding Cloudian and consuming, being able to use it and consume storage and interact with it in a good way. And that's why, you know, partners, well, there's really two classes of partners, right? There's software that are doing things like data management, backup archive, like Rubrik, like Veeam, like Commvault, those types of systems. And then they can very reliably implement against the S3 API and then work seamlessly. And then there's another class of partners that are really, you know, platform and overall cloud architecture type companies. And those are, you know, VMware, where, you know, they need a infrastructure to do storage. And how do you do that and do it seamlessly? In a pluggable way, and that's where we can integrate with them. AWS is a good partner. They've, you know, jumped on the hybrid bandwagon with Outposts as well.
Yes. Yeah, and I noticed you guys have a solution for Outposts, don't you?
That's right. So we can provide the S3 storage that supports Outposts.
Wow.
So,
and which when you think about it, is a bit crazy. You know, when you think about in an outpost, an AWS outpost, it's not S3. There's no, like, they don't ship the S3 there in the outpost. It's you guys doing the S3. That's cool. I love that.
Right.
I just want to
talk. But if you think about it.
Go ahead.
Well, if you think about it, right, you know, being in the software industry, you know that, you know, to operate a huge service like S3 in AWS, that's a whole different problem from being able to deliver the software bits that can run on a specific machine and Outposts, right?
Yeah.
And that's the disconnect there.
Yeah. And going back to the VMware partnerships, I know it's close to my heart. Sure. You know, the VCD, the VMware Cloud Director integration, like you guys have done great work there to integrate and offer. So what service providers can do is basically deploy Cloudian, plug it into VMware Cloud Director, and then offer object storage endpoints for their tenants through the VCD UI. Like, that's seriously cool, right? That's a really good feature, because I remember, and it solved a problem. I remember before I joined Veeam, you know, I've been 6 years, nearly 5.5 years, where we're trying to work out how we offer object storage to our customers in a consumable fashion. So for you guys to partner with VMware to create that interface that makes that easy, so a tenant can just go in and create a new bucket, have the endpoint through the VCD interface, that's huge.
Right. So I remember talking to the VMware VCD team, and I asked them, you know, how are you going to use this? How are your users going to use object storage? And they said everything, right? So their applications themselves are going to want to do it. They have, you know, traditional backup and archive are also they want to do through VCD. And then that infrastructure itself, that platform software itself, needs some reliable, cheap, good solution for that as well. Like, how do you store all the assets that are stored that are needed to support a VCD implementation? So it's very interesting, wide use cases.
Yeah, and actually, as you've done, I literally made a note there because I just had like a brain idea about, you know, for my day job, something that we can work on together. So I'll get back to you on that with VMware. Good stuff. So I guess just to wrap up, because we've gone a little bit over 40, I just wanted to ask you a couple of questions about, you know, you've talked about your disruption, what you guys have done. You've talked about your great products. You've talked about the ability for S3 object storage to become primary. So, you know, what are you guys going to be doing firstly to internally disrupt yourselves continually, but then that then leads to external disruption. So how are you going to continue to be, you know, disrupting the market?
Right. Well, I guess internally that's the innovator's dilemma, right? Clayton Christensen, like, you know, so you don't want to be Kodak with film. You want to be Microsoft Office moving to a subscription model, right? Yeah. So those are the two ends of the spectrum. So that's part of the reason why I've switched to a CTO role, where I'm really focused on the new technologies and new use cases of how we could provide this consumable storage for users and a platform, especially as we talked about data gravity, as we push the platform, push the data and compute capability as close as possible to where it's generated at the edge. So that's one of the models we're following at Cloudian, where we constantly are thinking about, you know, how do we internally disrupt ourselves so we don't get into a mode where, you know, we keep growing, but you know, it eventually comes to a dead end.
Yeah.
And that's really also, you know, going to help and disrupt the external market as well, right? So one of the concepts we see that's very much in vogue is cloud, right? You know, if it's the cloud stocks, you know, if you talk to your mother, you know, she says she's talking about the cloud, but really at Cloudian, we're thinking about the post-cloud world, right? So we know that the cloud by itself is not going to be sufficient because of this data gravity problem. We simply cannot expect to move all our workloads or all our data into a cloud. So how can we build the software to support this post-cloud world? And that's a very interesting problem with a lot of possibilities.
Yeah, awesome. And it's you're probably the first person I've talked to that's mentioned the post-cloud world, but I think that's a good way to put it, because years ago it was all about the public clouds, and every CIO, CTO, CEO was saying, you know, just demanding that everyone move to the public clouds, and that's it. The reality is there's been a pushback and a pullback as well from that, and now it's completely hybrid. So, you know, the post-cloud world is an interesting way to phrase it, because we are certainly in that current phase here. So it's going to be interesting to see what happens. Now that's awesome. I think, you know, I've really enjoyed the conversation. This was great, Cloudy, and I've done some great things in my particular area of expertise around service provider space. You guys are doing great guns. The company continues to evolve and do well in the enterprise as well. So, and I think, like we've talked about, the data gravity situation, the whole fact that, you know, object storage is moving towards that primary use case and workload, I think it sets you guys up for a very bright future. So thanks for being on the show. So we'll just wrap it up now.
Oh, yeah. Thanks, Anthony. And thanks for what you're doing for the community. Appreciate your podcast.
That's awesome. Thank you very much. So just as a final reminder, if you'd like to be on future episodes, or if you aren't subscribed, please head to the new website, gtwgt.com. Have a look around it. Go to the past episodes. And, you know, thank you, Gary. Thanks, Cloudian, for being on the first episode of season 2022. And we'll catch you next time on Great Things with Great Tech. All right.